from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Death toll from Libya's flooding is expected to reach 10,000 as aid groups appeal for immediate funding.
There are, you know, rescue operations happening as we speak. Rescue operators are under-resourced, they are under-equipped, and they are underfunded. And so Libya, at this testing moment, needs every support it can get.
Malawi police recover ammunition in containers confiscated from refugees. South Sudan wants to hold elections without a permanent constitution. The United Arab Emirates reverses a visa ban on Nigeria. The Liberian government investigates drugs seized at the country's international airport.
LDA runs lab testing on the substance, and of course the result came out to be positive. It is confirmed that indeed those substances believed to be narcotic drugs, and they were tested positive for methamphetamine.
And Botswana says its elephant population is strong enough to allow for trophy hunting. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Powerful storm Daniel has left more than 2,000 people dead from flooding in eastern Libya. The country's health minister told local media on Tuesday he expects the toll to reach 10,000. Ahmed Biram is the Norwegian Refugee Council media advisor for the Middle East. He tells me that his organization is appealing for a swift response and immediate funding from the international community.
The city where the most impact happened, which is Derna in the east of the country, has been virtually cut off from the world, and there's no power there. Our teams say there is no water, there is no connection, there's no internet, there's no service. This small town has been, you know, completely shut from the outside world. The only way out is through the sea, through a narrow route from the south. And you can imagine people trying to flee the place. There are people who will spend yet another night, if they are lucky, in a dry spot on the street. It's a very tragic situation. It's a village by the sea. It has been surrounded, completely immersed in floodwaters, and now people can't get out. There are, you know, rescue operations happening as we speak. Rescue operators are under-resourced, they are under-equipped, and they are underfunded. And so Libya, at this testing moment, needs every support it can get.
As you said, we do not know in terms of casualties, because some of the reports we are reading point to perhaps a huge number of people that could die.
Yes, thousands are missing and thousands have died already. I don't want to put a number on it because rescue operators are doing their job at the moment. They're hopefully digging people out from under the rubble, from under the areas they have been stuck in. But we expect this to be a very, very heavy outcome in terms of casualties. Not just that, but also displaced populations. A lot of people have been displaced for years. Now they are reliving the experience. Just when you thought, you know, that they were on the way back to recovery, now they have taken another blow. And this is a very severe blow. This is going to be, you know, a tragic situation for tens of thousands, not just in Derna, but also across Libya. The thing about this is that Libya, with its many problems, has been off the headlines for months, if not over a year now. Now it's back in the spotlight, and it is important to stress that Libya has been left behind, the Libya crisis has been left behind, and now it's time, you know, for donors to get back on track and fund this emergency.
As you mentioned, Libya has been off the radar for some time because it has had its own internal problems. What do you see as some of the challenges in trying to get aid to Libya?
I mean, it's a catalogue of challenges, really. The biggest challenge is obviously the underfunding that, you know, has been chronic and has been deep and has been going on for years now. I think the UN appeal for Libya is only 25% funded. That is a fraction of what Libya needs, and that is before this recent disaster.
Ahmed Biram is the Norwegian Refugee Council media advisor for the Middle East. He was speaking with us from neighboring Tunisia. Reporter James Shimayula in Nairobi, Kenya, has additional reporting about the Libya flood.
An official from the International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies speaking from Tunisia via a video conference call, says massive floods caused by extreme rainfall have caused devastating flooding in eastern Libya's five cities, killing at least 3,000 and up to 10,000 others reported to be missing. This is how Margarete Harris, spokesperson of the World Health Organization, described the floods.
Torrential rain to an area affecting at least 1.5 to 1.8 million people. It's also damaged hospitals. It's left some, wiped out some hospitals, left some partially functioning. So the work now is really to get in supplies. Sadly, some of those supplies include things like body bags, but also trauma kits. So, and we have to look at what kind of field hospitals can be set up, what kind of mobile clinics. So there's a great deal of work that needs to be done.
Diplomats say the Libyan government announced 3 days of mourning in all affected cities, calling them disaster areas. Emergency responders, government workers, and residents were digging through rubble to look for survivors. According to the diplomats, Libya has become a key springboard for migrants heading for Europe from over 44 nationalities who most likely have also been severely impacted by the floods. Paul Dillon is a spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration.
There are roughly 100,000 migrants in Libya at this time. We're conscious that in some of the affected areas, there are migrant populations at this early stage, and with the many access issues that we and the humanitarian responders are facing, we don't have a clear picture about how badly they have been affected.
Libya, a mostly desert, oil-rich country, has been in political chaos since long-serving ruler Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown and killed in 2011, leaving the country effectively split with an interim internationally recognized government operating from the capital Tripoli and another one in the east. Since 2014, Libya has been divided into competing political and military factions based in different parts of the country. The two sides signed a permanent ceasefire in 2020, but political rivalries continue. For VOA Africa, I'm James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Police in Malawi have recovered ammunition and cash during a surge of steel containers that they confiscated during the forced relocation of refugees who were illegally staying outside a refugee camp. As Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, a local human rights campaigner says police are not respecting the refugees' property rights.
Malawi police confiscated the large steel containers from refugees and asylum seekers on suspicion they contained rifles, ammunition, and counterfeiting machines for criminal activities. The Malawi government started the forced relocation of refugees to the country's only refugee camp, Dzarika, in May of this year. Authorities said the relocation was in line with the government's policy that prohibits refugees from staying outside the refugee camp. The government also said by staying outside a designated camp, the refugees were posing a threat to national security. Peter Galaya is the national spokesperson for the Malawi Police Service. He told VOA on Tuesday, police have so far forcibly opened and searched 24 containers during the exercise, which started 3 weeks ago.
We have actually just found five live ammunitions for AK-47, which our police dogs from the K-9 unit sniffed out, and money amounting to about 1.4 million from one of the containers.
The cash discovered is equivalent to about $1,400. Kalaya says police so far have arrested four people, including a Malawian national who said he was sent to witness the opening of the container with ammunition by its owner, who was not present when the police opened and searched it.
We arrested three in our first and second weeks of searching the containers, and those were arrested for operating businesses without licenses in Malawi because they did not have appropriate documentation for them, allowing them to be doing business in Malawi.
Kalaya says the recovery of ammunition justifies the exercise that human rights campaigners have long condemned.
Because if we have live ammunition, it means these were used by some rifles. For example, they are for AK-47s.
Michael Kayatz is the executive director for the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation in Malawi. He says the way the exercise is being handled is concerning. Some of the refugees were using the large containers to hold perishable items for their businesses.
Our concern is that some refugees have complained that some projects were destroyed, got rotten, you know. The government needs to ensure that the refugee rights into, you know, property should be respected.
Kalaya says police invited the owners of the containers to witness the opening exercise are not showing up. He says perishable goods from containers that are not claimed by the owners are being auctioned as ordered by the court. A Burundian refugee who asked not to be named for fear of reprisals says many owners of the containers shunned the exercise for fear of arrest because they do not have sufficient documentation of their businesses. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 13. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Liberian government says it has launched an investigation into the origin of several boxes containing illegal substances confiscated at Robbers International Airport. Denise Nipson has more from Monrovia.
On Monday, Liberia's leading newspaper Front Page Africa reported the discovery of 100 boxes containing illicit drugs that arrived in Liberia on August 31 through Kenya Airways. The boxes bypassed the watchful eye of the head of security at the Robbers International Airport. Following the revelation, the Liberia Airport Authority disclosed the boxes contained green leaf stevia or organic stevia leaves, also known as moringa and usually used in tea. The leaves were said to be in custom custody and would be turned over to the Liberia Drug Enforcement Agency for further testing. On Tuesday, the Justice Minister, through the Ministry of Information, issued a statement confirming the interception of the boxes. The statement said the seized boxes packaged and in natural form at the Robbers International Airport included methamphetamine. The statement said Justice Minister Councillor Musa Dean has with immediate effect ordered the Joint Security of Liberia as well as LDEA to expand their investigations into the importation of illegal drugs and to bring those involved to book. Neither the Minister of Justice nor Information availed themselves for this report. Michael Gipley is the Public Relations Officer of the Liberia Drug Enforcement Agency.
Following the opening of the cartoons, a substance believed to be narcotic drugs were discovered in these cartoons. And so a sample was taken and was brought to town, and the LDA run lab testing on the substance. And of course, the result came out to be positive. It is confirmed that indeed those substances believed to be narcotic drugs, they are actually narcotic drugs, and they were tested positive for methamphetamine.
Eddie Jawolo, the executive director of NEMOT, a civil society group promoting democracy and human rights, says he is not satisfied with the government's response.
For DEA to even come out now, after almost 10 days, it's a belated. It's actually belated. And I think even the Ministry of Information, they are all belated. The government should not take the issue about drugs lightly. Drugs can undermine the peace and stability of the country. Since the 30th, according to information arrived on the 30th, today is the 12th. Why took that long to start speaking about it?
In May this year, following months-long trial, a jury in the capital, Monrovia, found four men not guilty of illegal transporting $100 million worth of drugs into Liberia. After their acquittal, the men left the country. The government has yet to tell the public who brought the drugs into Liberia. The latest confiscation of illicit drugs has raised more questions especially as the country is set to vote in presidential and parliamentary elections on October 10. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
Nigerians are praising the lifting of a visa ban by the United Arab Emirates following a meeting in Abu Dhabi this week between President Bola Tinubu and United Arab Emirates President Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan. Nigerian authorities also secured an investment deal worth billions of dollars, according to the presidency. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian presidential spokesperson Ajuri Ngelale says Nigeria and the United Arab Emirates have established a framework for investments worth billions of dollars across multiple sectors, including defense and agriculture. Speaking to Lagos-based Channels Television, Ngelale said the pact also resulted in the immediate lifting of a visa ban imposed by the UAE in October 2022.
What we've done today is to not only normalize relations, but then to add new dimensions to that relationship, a partnership that are mutually beneficial to both nations. And I think as we move forward, the details of those investments will become clear.
The UAE imposed the visa ban on Nigeria in connection with a number of diplomatic disputes. Dubai's Emirates airline also suspended flight operations to Nigeria over Abuja's inability to send the UAE an estimated $85 million in revenue that Dubai said had been blocked in the African nation. The monies could not be repatriated due to dollar shortages. Additionally, the UAE's Etihad Airways stopped flights to Nigeria. But Ngelale said Emirates and Etihad Airlines are expected to resume operations immediately without any payment by the Nigerian government. The spokesperson also said Tinubu successfully negotiated a joint new foreign exchange liquidity program with the UAE. Nigerian experts such as economist Emeka Oji welcomed the president's move as a step that could reverse negative economic trends.
It should be a no-brainer for them to reverse it. The major chunk of their tourism, whether it is education tourism or just holidaying tourism, that Nigeria would show up on the list of its major tourism income-earning countries.
The UAE's official Emirates news agency noted that its leader and Tinubu explored opportunities for further bilateral collaboration in areas that served the sustainable economic growth of both countries. The statement, however, did not go into detail about the lifting of the visa ban on Nigerians and the resumption of flights. But Oji says there will be a positive impact. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
South Sudan's Minister of Information, Michael Makui, says the country can hold elections without a permanent constitution. The leader of an umbrella group known as Other Political Parties, or ARP, says the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement faces several challenges, adding that laws are very vital for elections to take place in the country. For VOA News, Mayang David Maya reports from Juba.
Speaking at an event in Juba over the weekend, Michael Makui says repatriation of refugees and drafting of a permanent constitution should not be tied to the upcoming elections in December 2024. His latest statement contradicts some provisions in the 2018 peace agreement. Makui argues that the current national parliament, made up of appointed MPs, is not capable of approving a people-based constitution.
We can run elections with the current constitution. And then the elected body will be called a constituent assembly. This appointed parliament does not represent the will of the people of South Sudan.
The government spokesman says some political parties are using some provisions of the peace deal as a pretext to boycott elections and demand another extension of the transitional period.
Because they are sure that if we go for elections, they will not come back. So the best way is just to continue with the series of extensions.
Albino Boldiu, South Sudan's Minister of Youth and Sports, accuses Sudan's People Liberation Movement in opposition, or SPLMIO, of calling for a fresh extension of the transitional period.
We had the Macharity's speech recently. He said he doesn't want elections. He said he wants a more extended period of 24 months, which is 2 years. This means, seeing we achieved independence as a nation, we have been going through transition to transition to transition. But for how long? As a minister of youths, we do not need more war. We need elections.
Pok Bot Baluang, SPLM-IO Director for Communication, says the SPLM-IO under First Vice President Riek Machar is ready for elections. He says elections should be held as stipulated in the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement and the roadmap for ending the transitional period.
We are not for another extension. However, what we are we calling for now, they are not coming from out of the space. This is all I mentioned in that room. We are calling for the implementation of the peace agreement in letter and spirit, and especially the Brexit leading to a fair, credible, and transparent election.
Baluang insists a constitution is a vital requirement for holding elections and establishing a democratically elected government. South Sudan is left with about 14 months to prepare for elections in December 2024. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
The Botswana government says the number of elephants legally killed by hunters since the lifting of a hunting ban in 2019 is negligible. The government was responding to criticism from an activist who said that hunting threatens Botswana's elephant population and does not benefit ordinary people. From Habaruni, Botswana, Nkudise Dube reports.
South Africa-based anti-hunting activist Adam Cruz recently published a report titled Trophy Hunting in Botswana, a Tale of Declining Wildlife Corruption, Exploitation and Impoverishment. Cruz, who is among the leading campaigners pushing for a ban on trophy hunting, says the killing of elephants and other large animals threatens Botswana's wildlife. Additionally, he says hunting impoverishes communities because they do not benefit from revenue generated from the sport. Tato Rapaka, permanent secretary in Botswana's Ministry of Environment and Tourism, describes Cruz's report as malicious and misleading. Rapaka, in a statement, says the allotment of hunted animals is approved by international conservation body CITES and says the number of elephants killed compared to the overall elephant population is negligible. Elephants are considered an endangered species, but protection measures have allowed their numbers to grow in southern Africa. A recent census of the Kavango-Zambezi Transfrontier Conservation Area, or CASA, found that nearly 230,000 elephants live in the five-country protected zone. About 130,000 of the elephants live in Botswana. Isaac Theophilus, the chief executive of the non-profit Botswana Wildlife Producers Association, supports the government's stance.
Botswana is a free and democratic country capable of managing her own resources without outside interference.
International hunters can currently buy licenses to shoot about 300 elephants in Botswana per season. Theophilus says the number is reasonable.
All quotas that are put up for hunting for any particular hunting season are based on very conservative quotas.
Conservationist Mep Ives says the majority of the population in Botswana supports trophy hunting after the government conducted countrywide consultations prior to reintroducing the sport in 2019.
You know, the number of elephants that are being hunted are negligible compared to those that are being born.
Some Western countries, including the United Kingdom and Germany, are pushing for a ban on legally harvested animal trophies from Africa. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni, Botswana.
And that's it for this Wednesday, September 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sikus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all, and it's